There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to Mortal and Strong, the podcast. I'm Dr. Liz Murray, founder of this project, where each episode we will be sharing one interview from one of the voices from our project. Presented by myself and Laura Middleton Hughes, each episode will feature one voice, someone sharing their story of overcoming major medical problems early on in life, to share a message of strength, hope, and resilience to others. To learn more about the project, please visit our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And now for the latest episode.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Mortal and Strong. I'm Laura.
And I'm Liz.
And today we are joined on the sofa by the lovely Kerri-Anne, who we're going to be talking to all about her experience with breast cancer, which is quite a recent thing. Welcome Kerri-Anne. Thank you so much for joining us
today. Thank you. Thank you.
We are going to start with a little quick fire round just to kind of get us all in the mood for a nice interview.
I need to keep my mouth shut with this one because I do like to chime in.
She does. Bus or drive?
Drive.
Autumn or spring?
Spring.
Lunch or dinner?
Dinner.
Nail varnish or natural nails?
Natural.
Mm-hmm. Sweets or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Dresses or trousers?
Dresses.
Pasta or pizza?
Pasta.
Morning shower or an evening bath?
Both equally loved.
Lovely. Right, I'll pop those down. Don't need those anymore. So we're going to crack on with going back to Kerri-Anne pre-diagnosis. And where were you in your life? What were you doing? And what brought you to find the issue that took you to see the GP?
I was loving life. I was finally feeling like I was coming out the other side of very, very young children, a mother of two, now a 4 and 5 year old. Then they were 3 and 4, kind of getting a bit more freedom back in life and so on. And then I was laying in bed one morning, my son came to lay next to me. So I was really squished in the middle and I had to put my arm up, and my other arm came across here because his head was here, and he'd asked me to give him some tickles, so I was giving him some tickles, and I suddenly felt a lump underneath my armpit.
So literally just by chance?
Yeah, so I credit my son with being the one that helped me to find it. It was meant to be that he came in and squished me up against my husband.
Wow.
So I was in that position because I wouldn't have found it because I didn't check.
Were you aware that you needed to be breast aware, or like many of us, just it's one of those things that we know we should do but never get around to doing?
No, I was more than aware that I needed to, and I would have a little fondle in the shower, but the main thing for me but the main thing, not in a weird way. But I would feel, but the one of the biggest things that I've learned is that I wasn't doing it properly. So that's the thing that I now try and tell other people of how, and send them the videos on YouTube from, you know, Copperfield and so on.
When you say you didn't know how to do it properly, where were you feeling that you feel that you weren't doing it?
I was right? Just doing a little squidge, like, okay, you know, not a proper thorough feel.
Did you know to check around like the armpits and the collarbone and all the other areas? No. Or were you just literally focusing on the breast?
Yeah, literally just the boob, yeah. Which is why, if that's why I say if it wasn't for my son doing that every month in the shower, I wouldn't have found it because of where it was. It was so close to the armpit because it was in the lymph nodes as well.
And what did you feel at the time? Did you think it could be something?
Oh, just a complete dread. Just like, oh God.
Heart sink.
Yeah.
Did you think it was?
I'd never had anything like that before, and I knew it felt weird. Yeah, it didn't feel like my normal.
What did it feel like?
Quite hard. I was trying to tell myself it was, oh, it's just fibrous muscle, because I had been going to the gym. So it was like, oh, this could be a strain from the muscle, the tendon going from armpit to pectoral or something like that. But no, there was, it was quite round. And then it turns out that that wasn't the only one.
Did you have any other symptoms? Were there any dimpling or just
tired, maybe tiredness, but I always put the tiredness down to having two young children and just
constantly never sleeping.
Yeah.
And no pain?
No pain, no. No, not at all.
And so after that, what did you do? Did you leave it for a bit? Or did you go straight to see your GP?
I was at the doctor's that morning. And then I was on the 2-week referral to be seen. But then I decided, because the doctor very helpfully told me that that wasn't going to be 2 weeks, it was going to be more like 6 weeks. So I called up a local private hospital and got seen the next Wednesday, which was 5 days later.
And did they do tests and scans, or did they tell you at that time that they thought you...
So the consultant had a feel. I had all of the tests that they offer, so the mammogram, the ultrasound, and because of the ultrasound, they asked for the biopsy. I spoke to the doctor doing it. She told me that it was in the lymph nodes, and I knew there was something on the lymph nodes, so I knew what it was. Yeah.
And how did you deal with that in terms of obviously that news, but telling, you know, I presume your husband was with you, yeah, and your children, like, did you have to break the news to them, or you hide it from them for a while?
No, my husband was well aware. He was the first person I told when I found the lump. He was there with me that day when I was having the biopsies. My mum and my sister were aware because they were at home looking after the children. And the way that I dealt with it at that moment, I remember it really well, is my body went into shock because I started shaking. I actually was physically shaking, and the doctor couldn't do the biopsies until I'd calmed down.
Wow. I mean, it's a really, really hard thing to hear. And I think especially, you know, having young children, you know, you're thinking constantly of, like, what does that mean for me? What does it mean for them? And you've not just got yourself to think about.
No, not at all. Because of it being cancer, I think my mind, and I'm not sure whether it's the same for other people, but in my mind, when I think cancer, I think death. But that's not the case. That's what I have learned. And it was just a long process to figuring out next steps, what leads to what, but the wait in between are quite hard.
Mm. It's that process, isn't it? You get the diagnosis, but you don't get the full picture, because then you've got to have a full body scan and other things. Yeah. And I think at that moment, you know, especially, I mean, we knew each other, so you obviously knew about the chance that cancer can spread. And I think it is in those moments where your mind will go everywhere, because you kind of have to prepare yourself mentally that this could potentially show something that is maybe unexpected. And it's really tough.
And what stage was it when you've got the initial diagnosis? What stage was it, and how long ago was that?
What stage was the actual cancer?
Yeah.
Stage 2, but grade 3, so that's one of the more aggressive. But this is the other thing that I've learned along the way, which you wouldn't really want to know it unless you had to.
Mm.
So I would say that there's no way of, like, me having that prior knowledge without going through it, because I would have never asked those questions. But obviously there's different types of cancer, and you hear that, you see that on the posters, you see that everywhere. But the type of cancer is so important to the treatment that you have, and what order it comes in, and how long you have to wait for all of it. Finding that specific information, I think it was two or three weeks before I knew the actual type of cancer. And then after that, it was moving forward as to like mastectomy, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and what I needed and in what order.
So then they came with a plan?
Yes.
And you went through a mastectomy of your breast?
Yes.
How did you mentally prepare for that? Or was it quite a quick succession from your diagnosis to then having the operation?
It was probably, I would say, 6 weeks from diagnosis to operation, which is very quick, mainly because I was lucky enough to be able to go to the private hospital rather than wait on the NHS. That mental preparation was just, I've had operations before. I've never had a problem with worrying about going under anaesthetic or anything like that.
So the actual operation itself wasn't something you were really worried about, but it was just the I suppose, like you say, you're removing hopefully the cancer.
Exactly. That was the main thing. Just wanted it. People were saying, how are you feeling? I just said, I want it gone.
Yeah,
just want rid.
I remember that.
Take it.
You kind of like fall out of love with your body at that point, don't you? Because you're like, this is that thing, but there, and it's not good for me.
Yeah. I suppose for me, my breasts have never been a big thing for me because they've always been quite small, basically. So
I feel you.
Even though it is a big thing having something removed, and it has been, because it's hard to clock it in the mirror every now and again, or like what clothes I would wear are quite different.
So you've remained flat on that side?
Yes, yeah.
Will it be something that you explore in future to have the reconstruction, or are you not sure?
Possibly. I've learned that I don't have the answer at the minute, and if I don't, then it's a kind of see how it goes sort of thing.
I think that's healthy, actually, because you're not jumping the gun. You're not planning to kind of put yourself through something that you might not actually want to do.
Yeah.
And also it is a long process. I mean, you've only just started chemotherapy, haven't you?
Yes.
So when was it you actually began the journey with the chemotherapy?
It was at the end of January.
So very recently.
Yes.
Because we are in March now. So you've had 2 sessions, is that right?
Yes.
How are you finding it?
Horrible.
You can swear.
Yeah, you said really fucking shit.
Yeah, I had some bad luck in that I was allergic to some of the treatment that they give you alongside of the chemotherapy. So you have injections to boost your immune system and boost the production of white blood cells. But I was allergic to that, so it meant that the horrible symptoms that you have kind of went on a bit longer, and then this time I've had a chest infection because
I could hear it
I had to have some antibiotics and go into hospital. Those two things aside, it's not very pleasant.
How would you describe the feeling once you've had it? Do you feel quite ill? Have you had a lot of symptoms?
Yes. So a lot of nausea, a lot of tummy troubles. So going from one to the other. Mm-hmm. And also just in general, and someone described it to me, and this is the best way that I could describe it as well, is that you just feel like you've got a terrible hangover.
Yeah. It does make you not want to drink again. I must say, the idea of having a hangover after having chemo is just not nice, because it does bring you straight back to those days, because you just feel like you're constantly in this state of feeling, as you say, nauseous, but also just that. Do you find like the painful eyes, the concentration, that sort of stuff as well?
Yeah, I suppose so. I think you just feel a bit out of it, don't you? But you're not really with it, and you can't be conscious or present with other people. You might feel a bit useless in terms of being able to be sociable. I haven't had as much aches or pains or anything like that. The other things are just a sore mouth. And definitely getting a horrible taste.
The metallic taste, yeah.
They give you drugs for the drugs, but then you need the drugs for the drugs.
For the drugs. Like, literally. What have you found throughout? Because I know there's support out there and charities that help. And there's a little gift you get usually as a breast cancer patient. How have you found that has made you feel and helped? And what charity is it?
Well, little lifts. I had two boxes. I felt like I should give one back. So I've already had one. I had one for surgery when I had my mastectomy, and I had my gift box for chemotherapy as well, and they're just brilliant. I use all of the things in those boxes. Mm. They're all really, really helpful. All of them. There's not one thing that I was given that I haven't used.
It's amazing, isn't it, to think that somebody has kind of accumulated all these products based on their own experience to be able to help somebody that's going through that experience now. Mm. And it's just something that you don't necessarily expect to have to like get at that point period, but having sort of, it's almost like a safety net of like, what do I need? Because it's so difficult to know. If you say to your friends, oh, I might need this, I might need that, but you never quite know exactly what products are going to be more useful. So yeah, I'm glad it's been really helpful, because it is a lovely thing. And there's so many other sort of charities that do help, and like special days out for families and bits and pieces, which obviously if you haven't looked into yet, you definitely should. The support out there for the children, I guess, because have you been quite open with your kids about it?
Yeah, so the Big C is another big one that has been really good. Before my treatment, when I was really stressed because I get quite a lot of physical anxiety, went to have reflexology, and that was really good. And also while I was there, I spoke to one of the ladies about kind of literature that I could use for young children to explain it to them. And they gave me a book, which was really, really good. And it's literally the exact process that I've gone through, the story. It's called Mummy's Lump, and it was mastectomy, chemotherapy, radiotherapy. So we're only like two-thirds of the way through, so we'll do the last bit when I'm having my radiotherapy.
Good.
Yeah,
that's really good.
Yeah.
So like drip feeding them little bits of information rather than it being all overwhelming at once.
Yeah, they also gave, my breast care nurse also gave me some flashcards that have the alphabet on them, and for each letter of the alphabet is something to do with what I'm going through. So
remind me the name of that one, because it's really useful for people. Is it Little C Club?
Yes.
The Little C Club. Yeah, and that was actually founded by
I couldn't remember.
It was set up by two ladies who actually are sadly no longer with us, who both had secondary breast cancer. And they created these incredible flashcards from A to Z, and each one has different descriptions. So H might be hospital, and I have a description about being in hospital, and it's a way of being able to sort of simply describe what that thing you're going through to your family and your children without it being overwhelming. And it makes it kind of a game and a bit of fun. So it's definitely a good one for people to have if they are in a similar position with children, because, you know, all these little things do help. And it's amazing that it's taken sort of a mother to do that, to create it in order to then help going forward. And how did you cope with things like your hair loss, and how did the children cope with that? Because again, you know, as much as there is the internal issues that you probably don't really show to the children because you can't see them, that is a big...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Visual thing.
Yeah. The way that I coped with it was making sure that my hair didn't go to waste, so I donated it, and my children were the ones that cut it.
Wow.
So that's how I made it normal to them. The way that I coped with it was when it had all been chopped off and then put into a kind of a cropped, dyed it bright blonde. I did it wrong and it went orange.
Oh, no.
So then I tried again and then it went kind of yellowy orange. So, but that in itself was something to make me laugh.
and also a complete distraction.
And you know that if your hair comes back, you're not dying of that colour. Exactly. Go to a hairdresser.
Yeah, to Laura.
It is funny, actually, blondes, because you're not even that dark naturally. So, like, it probably should have gone blonde, but these box colours do sometimes do that. But next time it could be like, I don't know, bright purple or pink or something funky.
I thought you were going to say bright pink.
But like, you know how some people put like leopard spots on the when they've got their sort of shaved head but you've still got hair there, and like dye them with like leopard spots. I've seen a lot of people do like this henna crowns. They're quite cool on the hair. But, you know, again, it's something that you kind of have to try and normalise. But it is a big thing as a woman. And I mean, your hair was beautiful, long, blonde. And to suddenly, I mean, I don't think I've ever known you to have short hair. You've had kind of like a long bob before. It's that, it takes away, you were saying it earlier today, it's that that makes you look like a cancer patient.
Yeah. Even having it shaved off, which again, my children helped to do, and my husband shaved his hair off.
Did he?
So it was just it was just a family, so it's like a normal thing. Not that's what
the kids didn't want their hair shaved as well.
No, my little boy didn't. We kept joking. He was like, no. But that was how we made it normal for them. But even then, having the shaved head, I didn't mind it. I didn't actually mind it. I felt because I had the support around me, and I didn't feel vain about not having my hair. But I was still okay with how I looked. But yeah, I think now that I don't have my hair, that's I don't really like that.
Mm.
But yeah, it's all part of it. I know.
It is. But it's okay to have that moment of grieving. Because it is part of your identity. And you said about being vain, but it is everything from your boobs, your hair. You're losing control of your body, and it's okay to mourn for that aspect as well as the physical pain and the other fears.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah, I have my moments.
I was going to say, do you allow yourself to sit back and kind of have the why me's and the upsetness?
I can't stop them. They come out when they have to, I think. Yeah, or even when I don't know what it is, and then suddenly I'm just like, oh yeah, that's what that is.
What do you do when you're in that slump to pull yourself back out of it and like to carry on, I suppose? Like, is there anything you do? Have you got a kind of ritual or a hobby or something that distracts you?
Before distraction, I just try and sit in it, and I usually just have a cry, to be honest. And if I feel I need to cry but it's not coming, then I'll either listen to music that I know makes me cry or watch something sad that makes me cry.
Because it's actually quite cathartic to do that, isn't it? I think it's needed.
It gives me the release I need, I think. And then I would usually share that's how I feel, either with my husband or with someone close to me. And then I would probably go and play with the kids or do something to take me back to the world.
Bring you sort of into the now. Yeah. And I think that's also very important, isn't it? Is to not sort of jump too far ahead in your journey, to focus on the now and not, because you do still have quite a long way to go, and you do still have, you know, the chemo to go get through, the radiotherapy to get through. It's also important to acknowledge that just because you will get to a point where you're finished, it doesn't automatically mean that you as a person are finished, because you still have a lot to deal with, whether that's side effects, whether that's the grieving process, whether that is, I often find that actually sometimes, and this isn't to sort of scare, but like the worst comes at the end, because that is when you almost can look back and see, wow, I've done this, and it can hit quite hard, I think. Do you have a good support network around you? Like, do you find that you are getting that support or finding people to talk to?
Yeah, I'm so lucky. I feel very, very lucky. And I'm not afraid to ask for help either, which I think sometimes people can be. So I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like I have more than enough people
good
to help, and support.
And you were working. What, how has it affected work? Because again, work is a big part of your personality and who you are.
Now I've missed, as it's funny, we've been talking about all of these horrible things, and that's the one that will make me upset.
Oh, can you take a minute,
take a pause. We don't need to if you don't want to.
Sure. Already. Yeah. I miss work.
Because at work, you're not mum, wife. You're the glory of you and what you want to achieve independently of all that.
Yeah. I think because of what my work is, I'm, and again, very lucky to be able to be completely myself in at work.
So what is it you do?
Counselling therapist. So I work mainly with young people in a person-centred way to talk, actively listen, reflect with them about what's going on for them. And I miss being able to be that for people.
And it's something that hopefully, looking to a future, that you can get back into. And your own experience is hopefully going to sort of make you a better counsellor in that sense, because you've dealt with something that is massively life-changing. It is hard now because you don't know when that's going to be and when you're going to be able to get back into it. But, you know, there's so much that you'll probably bring to the table from those experiences once you are strong enough to do so.
Do you feel strong right now?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
You're right in the middle of it, aren't you?
Yeah, I do feel strong, and it's those times when I need a cry. That's when I don't, like, I'll say to my husband, oh, I'm feeling a bit down today. Mm-hmm. Or, but the majority of the time that I do, all of that comes from wanting to be the person that my children deserve as well.
Yeah.
I'm laughing because, like, I'm smiling because that's the way I often think about pulling myself through stuff. Yes. Is I think, who do I want to be and who do I want to be as a role model? Who do I want my children to be looking at?
Exactly.
And if I'm not there, what do I need to do
to
be that person? That's a good way of pulling yourself forwards, isn't it?
Yeah. And it doesn't need to be all the time, but it's important to me that it is. I'm like that for them. I don't mean, it's not necessarily being strong. It doesn't necessarily mean not showing vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. That's also important for children to see that you can have those moments.
It's okay.
Yeah, you can be, because I tell them all the time, it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry.
Yep. Yep.
They see me sad and they see me angry as well as happy.
Because outrageous. Sometimes when you are almost told not to, that's when you sort of start to find problems, isn't it? Especially in children, because they then can't show that emotion or don't want to because they're scared that they're going it's going to be dismissed. And actually we all, you know, we all do have those moments, even if we haven't got a disease to, you know, to endure. We all go through anger and sadness and grieving and other processes. It's just on a slightly more concentrated scale when you're going through something like this.
It's bizarre in society how we have normalized positive energy and positive emotions, but we've made it a taboo to talk about or show sadness, fear, anger, despair, to go off and hide it. And then we're raising a new generation every year and they need to see that it's okay and it's normal, like you say.
And to be able to articulate their feelings. Because again, I think that's the trouble with children is they can't. So then they will show that they're sad or angry by being naughty or playing up. It is amazing actually how much what you do as a parent does impact that and does kind of filter through the line. What would you, obviously you're still going through it now, but going back to the start of your journey before you found out, what would you have said to yourself?
Probably just to highlight how long things can take in terms of finding something to being treated for it.
Yeah, because you sometimes think it's going to happen really
quickly. Yeah, the biggest thing for me has just always been the waiting, I think. Mm-hmm. I've been okay with keeping my head strong and knowing that I can cope and do it, but the weights have, that's what's made it harder. Yeah, so if I knew someone at the beginning of their journey, whether it was me or someone else, just say, you're not going to have answers straight away and you're not going to necessarily be able to get to the point that you want to be at straight away. It's going to take time.
And I think that's really important to say along the whole journey, because actually I think there is this element of people just want it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is a long and slow process, whether that be through, you know, getting the surgery, getting the chemo, your body's healing. You've then got potentially options of reconstruction. We had this conversation in another podcast that, you know, the reconstruction can be a long process as well. So there's not a quick fix. And often, you know, you might get told at the start of your journey, well, give it a year. I'd probably say from experience, give it three. Because it is that, it's everything. You know, your body is going through so, so much that you need to allow it to heal, to repair, and it's that, I suppose the other thing that's really important is to say that your normal will always be a bit different now. You'll never kind of, as much as that person before will be there, there is going to be a change. And it's sometimes that is sometimes almost trying to accept that and not trying to fight it and find the person you were, because cancer, sadly, once you've had a diagnosis, it's going to hang over you forever. Mm-hmm. And it's hopefully gonna, you know, often I see it impacts people in so many positive ways because it changes their outlook on life, it gives them something to live for, but it definitely does change you as a person.
We were saying that last night, how pre-medical issues, that you're never going to be that person. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. You're a stronger version of yourself, but you are changed by your experiences. Mm-hmm. And that affects your relationships with your friendship groups, your spouse, and your outlook on everything, because we're all growing and being influenced by, like, rocks that tumble in the sea and they're shaped by bashing into other rocks. We're slowly being molded to the person that we are at the moment, and navigating that is another aspect of having something like this happen that you're not forewarned about, and to be prepared for the fact that your relationship with your partner might change, who you are is inevitably going to change, but it doesn't mean for the worse. You know, that pre-cancer, pre-medical condition person versus now,
it's not the end of the road, it's just a different turning.
Yeah, thank you. My brain fog was beginning to kick in there. I was like, Laura, finish
it. It's not the end of the road. You haven't come, you know, you haven't come to the end. There is definitely just another little twist and turn to take, and it's finding that path that you want to take it.
Yeah. Really, I've got so many plans of what I wanna do. So
tell us.
Tell us what you think.
Well, just being, there's a doctor who I've started to follow, her name's but she has given me a lot of insight into, after having diagnosis and treatment, what you can do to hopefully prevent recurrence or stay healthy, live healthy after having cancer. I'd like to actually properly commit to that, as well as just mind, body and soul stuff, like possibly art and possibly gardening. Oh my goodness. I'm totally going to get into my garden.
Again, nothing outside. Between pets and gardening, like, everyone keeps talking about how therapeutic gardening is.
I find it stressful because I'm just not getting that.
I need to look into this because maybe I'm missing a trick here.
I think I'll get some like fake plants and then I'll just pretend to wash them
because at least I can't kill them.
Yeah.
Again, pets. Oh. They're important.
Babies.
Yep.
And it's always good to have things for the future, hopes and dreams and plans. And we're going to be, you know, we are going to be following your journey throughout this process, because we are hoping that come 8th of March next year, when we exhibit, you know, you will be back to a fitter, stronger, healthier version of yourself, you know, without the treatment and just recovering. And it's going to be really, I think for us, really interesting to see how your journey takes you and where you are from today, you know, still in the midst of such a horrible and harsh treatment, to, we're hoping we'll find your butterfly at the end and you'll be glowing. And you'll be...
Love that as well. That's the plan.
That's the plan.
Things don't always go to plan, though. But things are fucking out of control bollocks. And there's the swearing.
There we go. There we got there.
Yeah, don't mind. The kids won't be watching. It's fine. So we are going to end every podcast with asking a question that we'd love to get answered. And it's, in the mornings, what is the one thing? At the minute, obviously, this might change as we go through your journey. What is the one thing that makes you smile and brings you joy first thing?
Oh, my kids. Easy.
Yeah.
They come and jump on you in the morning.
Literally, yeah. They're the light.
Light in the tunnel.
Oh, that's lovely. And I honestly, we wish you all the best in all your treatment. And
thank you so much for joining us here and having this chat with us and sharing your story with people that will help other people that you may never meet, but it has helped people.
You're welcome.
So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you as well.
And we're here for you on your journey as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Mortal and Strong podcast. If you want more information about today's voice or how to get support on any of the issues we've discussed today, please head to our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And remember, click subscribe, find us on all social media platforms, and to find out ways of how to support what we are doing or more information on the project, head to our website. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.